Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin. Press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your call. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa's here screening your calls. If you're listening to us online, pick up the phone and dial 347-884-8327. There's still some lines open that'll get you live on the call. Once you're on the call, go ahead and press 1 if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it might be. We will be talking tonight about coolant and your coolant system, coolant analysis, all things coolant. And in fact, joining us, continuing on with our program from the live show the other night, is Elizabeth Nelson from Polaris Labs. She's the coolant program manager, and we might as well just get right to it. Again, if you want to join us on the live call, if you're listening online, pick up the phone and dial 347-884-8327. And with that, let's welcome Elizabeth to the show. Elizabeth, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Doing great. How are you this evening?
I'm great.
Well, it's great to have you back. The 30 minutes we spent on the live show the other night just flew by, and I know there was a lot more you wanted to cover. And I had questions, and we had a lot of questions from the listeners, but we've had a great response, and I think everybody is looking forward to continuing on with it.
Good. Well, so am I.
All right. So we've got an hour. We don't have to take any breaks. We will be taking calls, but before we do that, I know you have some things that you want to cover. Why don't we go ahead and get started?
Okay. Well, one of the biggest things that I wanted the listeners to understand is many times we think about the cooling system as being so separate from the rest of the engine. And to kind of put this in perspective, you know, the cooling system, if it's not maintained properly and operating properly, it's going to affect your combustion chamber efficiency. You can have premature engine wear as well as component wear. It can affect the emission control by not being able to cool that EGR. It affects the lubrication. If you have excessive heat, that's going to cause degradation of your lubricants to the point that they can no longer protect. It also can affect your transmission life. Your high fluid temperatures is going to reduce the life and lubricity of that oil, as well as increase the internal components of the temperatures, as well as it can affect your computer systems by forming scalar sludge on the sensors. If we take a look at it, it's not a complete separate system. They all have to work in tandem together for the health of that engine and to maintain the system properly. So I think it's really important. We like to take a look at this, you know, put it in a perspective as, say, our body. A lot of times we say that oil is like your blood, and the cooling system is like your lymph fluid. And if your lymph system is not working properly in your body, other organs are going to be affected. The same is true in your engine. So that's pretty getting pretty bare bone perspective, but it kind of gives you an idea of how it really affects the entire engine.
Yeah, it really does. And it's, you know, when we think about that and all the other things that
the cooling system touches and affects and has a direct impact on, and yet we've pretty much ignored this system. I mean, even industry-wide, shops, technicians, owner-operators, fleets, we really just don't do a whole lot with it. If the level is right and it's not leaking at the moment, we tend to ignore it.
Exactly, or we hold it up and say, oh, well, yeah, it's clear green, yellow, or clear red, orange, it looks good, it's good to go. And really, it's the contaminants that you can't see that can get us into more trouble than the contaminants we can see. And those contaminants are things like chloride contamination and sulfate and hardness coming from a bad source water, degradation acids, things like that. You know, so it's really more than just visually looking at it. I mean, yeah, we have to look at it, see if there's any oil contamination or fuel or that, but it's those contaminants that we can't see that tend to get us into more trouble.
Yeah, and one of the things we talked about the other night, one of the first and most basic things that could potentially get us into trouble is not having the right coolant in there to begin with. Probably the first thing we should be checking.
Exactly. You want to make sure that coolant meets the engine manufacturer specifications for the metal alloys and the hose and seal material that they've used to manufacture that engine. It's very important.
You know, I did a little more digging after we talked the other night, and I noticed that kind of the easy way out on some of the engine I checked was check the owner's manual. You said that gives us tells us exactly what should be in there. And then it seems like the manufacturers had their own coolant. And if you stuck with that, you were pretty safe. And then I got off into, if it wasn't the manufacturer's coolant, the requirements, and it started to get a little more confusing.
Yeah, it does. The biggest thing that you need to understand is that there are ASTM specifications for coolants. And if anybody wants to sell you coolant, just make sure that they can give you independent certified testing. And that's not the testing my lab does. That's very specialized testing that takes place for a new product, that it meets the ASTM 6210 specification for use in heavy-duty engines. And that's really, you know, where you want to be. Most of your OEMs, that's the specification that they utilize. Cummins is a little bit different. They went a little bit further, and they have their own engineering spec, which is Cummins Engineering Spec 14603. So, but, you know, it's the easiest thing is just to, you know, use what the engine manufacturer specifies. There's a lot of good coolants out there that meet those OEM specifications, but there are some products out there that aren't quite so good. So just know what you're getting.
Yeah, that seemed to be kind of the confusing part for me was, you know, if I read the manufacturer's brand, that seemed somewhat easy, although I even found several different levels. I found coolant and then coolant with inhibitors and coolant with this, and then there was the next level, and then it was really... I thought it was pretty confusing, more so even than oil. And oil, you know, we've had all of our different APIs in the different alphabet soup. But and part of it, I know, is because I haven't paid attention to this before. And that's why we're excited to have you on, because it's one of those things that the more we hear it, the more it will start to make sense. You know, I saw OATs and NOATs, and, you know, I started to think, I thought I knew this, but maybe not. You know what?
You know, it used to be where we just had conventional coolants, and they had different inhibitor packages. Some of them were more like a nitrate borate phosphate, some were a nitrite silicate borate type formulation. But as we've changed our engines, the metal alloys and the hose and seal material that we use, and more importantly, as we've increased the temperatures of those engines, these fluids have had to change as well. I'm sure it's not that the engine manufacturers have wanted to go into making all these different types of coolants, but there's been so many changes on this engine. I mean, if you think about when my father started this back in the early 60s, we had an industrial radiator shop, and he started seeing corrosion from the inside out versus outside in. So he went back and studied nuclear reactors and boilers to figure out what was taking place. And what he found was that as we increased this temperature, so did the increase of potential for acid pitting or scale formation. And we increased the temperature to get better mileage and to meet the EPA restrictions and that. But we have to change our maintenance practices along with that.
Yeah, and that seems to be where things really kind of fell apart. Then I think it got worse with, around 04 when we started seeing EGR and engine temperatures went up and that new coolant formulas. And, about 2 years ago, I had somebody come on the show. They were from one of the big coolant manufacturers, and I hope I explain this right. They didn't produce a name brand coolant. They produced a coolant that almost everybody else put a name on.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And so we thought, well, that's, somebody good, because we're not really saying this brand is better than this brand, and we weren't promoting a brand, and we brought him on. And I think maybe he even almost oversimplified it, because he really seemed to just break it down to traditional and extended life. And the kind of what I took away from it was, if your engine was prior to 04, we could use just about anything in it. And after 04, we should be using the extended life.
And that's pretty much true. I mean, if you think about it, we think about the different formulas out there. Our conventional coolants are the typical ones that we were used to using, either a nitrite or nitrite molybdate inhibitor package with borates and possibly some silicates or some phosphates. Back in 95, when they brought out the organic acid technology coolants, they used carboxylic acids, and carboxylic acid is in the soap family. They're designed to lift deposits and keep that metal clean, so you get better heat transfer. And those are more in line with the Asian market. And then the Europeans use a hybrid formulation. And really what that is some of the manufacturers needed some other inhibitors in there that we typically would see in a conventional coolant, like a little bit of silicate and some borates for buffering. And so that's when they came out with the hybrid. And that's more of the European design type of coolant. But it's been needed because of the different alloys and seal materials and that. And we're so global now. Our components are made from, other countries like India and Asia and that. And so that's why they've become very important.
Okay. Now, when you say a hybrid, I've heard you use that when I was looking at the coolant. How would I know a coolant was a hybrid?
Typically, it'll say hybrid or universal coolant.
Okay.
Typically, the indicators that it's a hybrid type coolant. Organic acid technology or nitrated organic acid technology coolants, typically they're labeled extended life coolants, where the hybrids are more, say, universal type coolants. But those lines get a little foggy sometimes too, sometimes it makes it a little difficult.
Yeah, they've done that in oil with the synthetic, which, we thought was pretty clear, and then we find out that synthetic isn't really that clear, that we got blends and, what really is a synthetic and what isn't. And so we've kind of gotten through that on the oil, and I tend to understand it. Now, when you say organic acid technology, or what was the other one? The
organic additive technology. Those are the two names that are
okay.
Given. Yeah.
And then is there another one that there's an NOAT?
Yeah, that's just a nitrated organic additive technology coolant. That just means it has nitrites with it, okay? And nitrites are designed for additional iron production.
Okay, those were the two sets of initials that I was getting confused about. I would see OAT, and then I was seeing NOAT.
Right. The NOH just means it's nitrided organic additive technology. It has nitrites in it.
Okay. Now, are those the two that are, I think you were saying, extended life, that we've got a really long time on the additives typically?
Well, your hybrids do as well. Your hybrid coolants do as well. What gives you that extended life is the carboxylic acids, and that you're not having to continually add an SCA package to it. Like our typical coolants, we were always having to add SCAs to it. And one of the biggest issues in the field is improper topping off, not monitoring those SCA levels. So our customers were either over-treating or under-treating. And so really this is where these products answered that issue of not having to continually put these inhibitors in and have that over-treatment. When you saw that during the time when you saw silica gel, they called it green goo, things like that, silica kind of got a really bad rep. But really what was happening is people were over-treating their systems, and we can only hold so much in solution. And if we over-treat, it's going to precipitate out, and that will cause a lot of problems. So.
Okay, and we still see that as a problem then, correct?
We do, with people that don't monitor those SCA levels, and they just kind of haphazardly add some. Instead of checking them with the test strips or with a lab to find out if they really do need to add additional inhibitors.
Okay. Now, are you saying SCA?
Yeah, supplemental coolant additives.
Okay. That was
They're
the other thing that was...
They're also known as DCA as well, diesel coolant additives.
Okay, SCA and DCA. All
right.
And that was another thing that confused me. And again, it was just because we weren't paying attention to this, and you know, nobody was really talking about it. And I'm, you know, pretty well involved in trucks and mechanics, and it seemed like, you know, there was a time when we had water filters, and then all of a sudden we didn't have water filters anymore, and I never really paid attention. And then I found out that they weren't really filters at all. I mean, it was really more in order to get the additives back in, correct?
Right. Well, they have two different kinds. You have your what we call a pre-charged filter that has the additives pack in it, and then they have just the filters that have just the filter paper to remove debris from the coolant.
Okay.
So
how or why did we just get away from them completely? If there was a filtering element to it, what are we doing now? Are we just letting the junk float around in there?
Well, some manufacturers still have filters on their engines. Other manufacturers have gotten away from that. I'm not really sure the reasoning for that. I mean, even if you're not going to use a pre-charged filter or an inhibited filter, having a filter in the system to take out particulate is a very good thing. I mean, if you have abrasive particulate, that can scratch your soft metal surfaces as well as damage your seals. So I'm a big proponent of having filters on an engine, on the cooling system. To me, that's very important. But some manufacturers have gotten away from filter units on their engines.
Okay. Well, I guess there wouldn't be any reason we couldn't put a filter in, would there? If we didn't have one, could we install a filter?
Yeah, you can. Right, you can. You can tap one on.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
and
that's
to me,
good
it just
to know.
It makes sense. It's just an extra insurance policy there that, you know, you pull out any kind of debris. I mean, even oil, if you get, say, an oil cooler failure or something, you're starting to get oil in the cooling system, that oil hydrocarbons will destroy your rubber seals and hoses. It causes them to become gummed up and deteriorates them. I would much rather have that caught in a filter than having it pumped through the cooling system where it can damage those seals and hoses.
Okay. Now, what happens if we've got, and correct me if I say something wrong, if we've got the newer technologies with the long-life additives, if that's the right way to say it, and we're putting pre-charged filters on. Is that going to cause a problem?
Yeah, you shouldn't use SCA filters with the organic additive technology coolants.
How many shops know that?
Probably not a lot. Unfortunately, probably not a lot. Probably about as many that don't understand that they shouldn't use their tap water to mix the concentrate coolant.
Got it. Okay. So
and
that
it
could
really
be a problem.
Is an it could be. And it's really an education process because, again, it is the most neglected system on our engines.
Okay. Well, that's why we've got you here, and that's why we're going to continue to do this, and we'll work through it. And be patient with me if I'll catch on to this.
Well, that's what we're here for.
Yeah, exactly. So what we came away with from the other show, and I want to kind of go over it again real quick just because we've got new listeners on, and the lines are full. If you're on the line and you've got a question, go ahead and press 1. Lisa's screening those calls, and we'll get to them here in just a couple minutes. I came away with as a good first step is most of us have ignored our cooling system and or we've trusted the shop to be doing the right thing. We take our truck in, we get it serviced, and when it comes back out, we assume that we go in and they call this thing that we're paying for at the shop a PM, preventative maintenance. And what I've found out is there really isn't any preventative maintenance going on. They're dropping out oil, they're throwing on filters, and they're sending us on our way. And nobody's really checking much of anything. And when it comes to the cooling system, we've just trusted them. If we go in and we get a PM and they don't say anything about our cooling system, then we assume it's okay. And yet, there could be all kinds of problems going on that we don't know about. So
exactly. What
I kind of came away with was, first of all, let's just make sure we have the right coolant. And we kind of identified two steps to do that. Check your owner's manual and find out what should be in it, and then do the test. Your lab could tell us, if we took a sample and sent it in, you could tell us, first of all, what's in there, right?
Yes.
Okay. And that's step one. Let's just make sure we have the right coolant in there. And if not, I guess we would want to get that drained. Do we flush the system? You hear that all the time, drained and flushed. Is that something we should be doing?
Exactly. You know, and the thing we have to remember is that when we pull all the hoses and plugs from our system to drain it, you could have up to a third of that cooling system capacity left of the fluid. And so you want to make sure that you flush it so you get out any old coolant and contaminants that are in there.
Okay. So if we find out we have the wrong coolant, we're going to, at that point, we would drain it, flush it, get the right coolant back in, and we'd be starting fresh then. We'll talk in a couple minutes about what we would do. If we found out we have the right coolant in there, and a lot of times the people that we may be talking to are not the original owners of this vehicle. A lot of owner-operators are getting a truck from the used truck market. They have no idea what's been done or the history. If we determine through testing we have the right coolant, the next part of the testing would be to tell us the condition of that coolant, right?
Exactly. Is it, you know, like say with what we call a level 2 analysis, it's going to test the metals to make sure there is no metal corrosion, your iron, copper, aluminum, lead, tin, zinc, and silver. The contaminant levels, you're coming from water, calcium, magnesium, make sure nobody's used a bad source water in it, as well as the inhibitor levels, and which helps us determine what type of product. We'll never be able to tell you whose product you have into it, but we can get a pretty good idea of if it's a conventional coolant, a hybrid, an oat or a note, or if it's mixed.
Which I'm sure happens a lot, right?
It happens a lot, yes.
Yeah, we pull into a shop and they say they're going to do a PM and they notice we're slightly low on coolant and they just grab something and dump it in. Or we do it ourselves. I mean, I know plenty of times.
Top it off with what we have.
Yeah, guys will get a leak and, you know, they're at the fuel island and they run in and they grab a gallon of whatever. I mean, it's coolant. It must be okay. We dump it in the system.
Right. And if you think about it, I mean, let's just say we go to Walmart. We're going to go to Walmart real quick, and we're going to grab some coolant. And if you look at all the coolants, I mean, there's a whole array of them, and it's almost mind-boggling. And you look at, well, here's a gallon that's, you know, maybe $7, and here's one over here at $13. And a lot of times I think, well, I'm going to buy the $7 because coolant is coolant is coolant.
Right.
It's not.
Right.
If you think about the difference, what they do on some of the lower-priced coolants is they start backing off some of the inhibitors, the amount of inhibitors or type of inhibitors they use. Now, when you think about how expensive our trucks are to maintain and you know, I mean, everything, the bottom line, you know.
Right, right. Well,
those inhibitors, you know, then
yeah,
it leaves your metal vulnerable. So we have to get away from thinking about just price basis. How many thousands of dollars are we trying to protect? That's what we need to be thinking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
A quality,
yeah, make sure we've got the right one. And so that would be step one, which is pretty simple, and I think the majority of the people listening are probably in that position. They really don't know what's in there. They don't know the history. They don't know what some shop may have topped it off with. And they don't know the condition. There's so many things that we should be testing for. So step one for all of us, let's find out what should be in there. Let's test it. Let's check the condition of it. And then you also mentioned that at each service, let's say we're doing 15,000-mile services or 25,000-mile services, whatever it might be, we could check that with a test strip for certain things, correct?
Exactly, exactly. Your test strip should include pH and nitrite and molybdate because, again, if you don't know what's in there, you know, it could be a nitrited formula or it could be a nitrite-molybdate formulation, and those levels are very different. As far as what's acceptable. And then I always recommend, even though the pH strips do have a glycol pad on them, if you have a chemical reaction taking place, it can skew that pad. And I always recommend using a refractometer to measure the glycol percentage and freeze point because you have a better accuracy. It's plus or minus 2%. And with our systems today, we don't have a lot of room on either side. If you're below 45% glycol, you can boil internally. If you're above 68% glycol, you're going to lose heat transfer on ethylene glycol. So I'm just a big proponent of using that refractometer just because it's the most accurate tool out there.
Okay. Now, I want to come back to that. Let's just finish up since we're on that thought. Where would we get a refractometer? How expensive are they?
Oh, they're not very expensive, and you can pick them up at any parts store. They're just a real common tool. We have them at Polaris as well. We have refractometers that we sell to our customers as well, and they're not a very expensive tool, less than $100 typically.
Now, you just said something that made me stop and think. One of the questions that I get, and, you know, I get it on a pretty regular basis, is somebody will call me and say, and this does tend to be more common on the 04 and newer trucks, EGR trucks. We know we have a lot more heat in them. Somebody will say, my truck is overheating on a hard pull. And we'll go through the normal stuff that we always do, you know, have the thermostats been changed out, you know, is the fan coming on at the right time? Has the radiator maybe been flushed or were those kind of things, that, you know, coolant levels right? But you just said something that I hadn't thought of. If our glycol level is wrong, you said we lose the heat transfer capability. Could we have an engine overheating just because we were off on the glycol?
Yes, you could. Yes, you could. And one thing that we're seeing with the newer engines also and all the heat, and we've been watching it for about a year now, is we're starting to see the water portion on some systems evaporating. And so if you evaporate some of the water, of course, that glycol level's not going, the glycol's not going to evaporate, the water is, and it'll start creeping up. So again, that's another reason to make sure at your PMs you're checking those glycol levels.
If it, and this is actually, we lose heat transfer when glycol, when we have too much glycol in the system, is that right?
Exactly. If you have too little of glycol, if typically if you're below 45% glycol, you can boil internally in that engine.
Or freeze?
Well, yes, you can freeze. Wintertime, you could freeze as well.
Okay. All right.
You know,
so,
but if you think about coolant, I mean, before it was just always called antifreeze, and in our mind it was for freeze protection. But as
right.
we increased the temperature of those engines, we started gaining some for boil point control. So if you think about water, it boils at 212 degrees. And then if you put a 50-50 coolant in, that brings the boil point up to 225 degrees. Well, a lot of our systems are operating at 225. So then we put pressure on the system, and you're going to gain 2.7 degrees for every pound of pressure you put on that system. But the other thing you have to realize, too, is that if you're going up over 5,000 feet, you're going to lose 3 degrees for every 1,000 feet above 5,000 feet. Okay,
okay.
So it's any of the trekkers that are going up over the Cascades or the Rocky Mountains or the Sierra Nevada, they have to doubly make sure that that glycol level is between 50 and 60%. That's where you want to be.
Well, you know, I just wonder now with these calls, and we've gone through all the usual stuff, and somebody will say, my truck will still overheat on that extreme cold. Most of the time I'm okay, and it never used to do this. And some of it, I've said, it could be just if we're getting deposits, we have decreased flow, you know, and I've kind of gone back to let's make sure the cooling system is in good shape, but I didn't even realize we could do something as simple as just check the glycol level. And my guess is the shops aren't doing that.
No, most of them aren't. And most of them don't. I mean, if you think about how our mechanics became mechanics, either they went into the or they went to a tech school, or maybe they learned from their father or their uncle, and then older mechanics kind of took them under their wings and taught them the ropes. But coolant maintenance was never a part of that curriculum in any of those.
I think you've just given me another good answer, another good troubleshooting tip, and it's something we can even do on our own. If we have that refractometer, we don't even have to pay the shop to do this step or trust that they're doing it. We could just do that step on our own.
Exactly. You're exactly right. And that's really what they should be doing, because the other thing that this field testing is going to allow you to do is to identify issues early on. If that pH level is dropping, let's just say you're using an organic acid technology coolant or a hybrid, and the pH range is 7.0 to 9.5. Well, if let's say when you put the coolant in, your pH level was up to 8.5, and then you do your first PM, and maybe that pH level is down to 8.0. Now it's still within range. pH doesn't drop that fast in that short a period of time. That's a clue that you have a chemical reaction taking place, leaning on that pH, especially if your nitrite is dropping along with it. Because nitrite is not a real stable inhibitor, and so it helps us tell when we're having chemical reaction. Now, typically, that's more of an indicator that you have an air leak into the cooling system. But if that coolant is getting darker in color or you're starting to get that burnt odor, then that's not an air leak. That's coming from a localized overheating issue. But if that pH level is below 7, then that's an indication of a combustion gas leak. So do you see
wow.
how the chemistry works with this? And so you can
wow.
catch things very early on before you have major component failure.
You know, we've over the last couple years here on the show, the more we've learned about oil analysis, and we've been doing the oil analysis on a pretty regular basis with Tom Bach from OPS, and we've had some people on from your lab, And we've learned so many ways that we could catch engine problems through the oil analysis. Now, and it's going to take me a while, there's a lot to learn on this, but now we have another tool that between the coolant analysis and the oil analysis, we can even dial down into what's really causing the problem. We have more clues as to what's going on.
Exactly, exactly. And remember that you can have a problem that starts out on the cooling system side, but that oil side may fail before the cooling system side does. Because the cooling system side, you're talking about corrosion metals, and it takes longer for corrosion than it does
right.
wear metals.
Right. Wow. This is, I'm actually excited. We have a whole new tool here to learn some things and a way to, I mean, really, if we start to follow this, if we have the right coolant in, if we do these checks on a pretty regular basis, the strips, the refractometer, and then I think you said the other day, twice a year we should be doing a full sample to the lab. Is that correct?
Yep, just twice a year, before summer and before winter, so that you know that everything's fine for that engine to go through your two harshest seasons.
Okay. If we were to do that, we could really be pretty well assured that our cooling system is in good condition for the life of the truck if we just monitor it.
Exactly, yes.
Okay, great. You know, there's so much more I'd like to ask, but I've got a lot of calls with questions. What do you say we take some of those?
Sounds great to me.
Okay, let's do that. I'm just going to start right up at the top. Let's go to Colorado. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi, how's it going tonight, guys?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, I have three quick questions. First off, a refractometer is actually better than a hygrometer?
Yes, it is. Yes, they're a lot more accurate.
Okay. The next question, I guess, is kind of on the testing side also. The shop that I go to now, I'm running a 2005 with an EGR motor. It's got the extended life coolant in it. He claims that there's no test strip that will tell me about the additive package in that.
That's not true. It depends on what product you're using. If you're using a nitrite or a nitrite molybdate type, the test strip will test for that. You need to make sure that the test strip you purchase is compatible with that product. But also, there are field test kits. If you're using Shell, Chevron, or Caterpillar ELC, there is a carboxylic acid pass-fail test strip that's on the market as well.
Okay.
If the carb acid fails, then that means that the coolant has been mixed with another type of coolant, typically a conventional, that has diluted out those carboxylic acids to a point that they cannot protect fully.
Okay, and the last question, and I guess this is kind of old school. One of the things that I've always done in any motor that I had was I would add some water-soluble oil to try to protect the seals and such. And I know Detroit Diesel says that's a big no-no. What has been your experience?
Exactly. You never want to add any type of oil products to the cooling systems. Now, in 1985, they changed the hose and steel material to what's called an EPDM rubber to withstand the extra heat, but it cannot withstand petroleum contaminants, and it will destroy your seals and hoses.
Okay, so, well, I guess machine of soil is out anymore. Okay, thanks
yes.
a lot.
All right, let's move right along. Let's go to Florida. Hugh, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. Good evening, Elizabeth. It is just unbelievably impressive how much you seem to know about this stuff.
Well, thank you. Thank you. My father taught me well.
There's a technology that's kind of just now being introduced to trucking that I've been looking into and very strongly considering employing on my truck. Are you familiar at all with the Evans waterless coolant?
I am. Yes, I am.
I heard you make a few comments earlier about elevated temperatures being detrimental to your lubricants and engine components. And what's going on with Evans coolant is because it doesn't boil and doesn't have water in it, and engines operate more fuel efficiently at higher temperatures, they're actually turning the temperatures up significantly. Instead of running them at 190 degrees or so, they're running them at 215 and higher. Have you done any research into if that might be damaging to the engines, or just how switching to an Evans coolant might affect the overall longevity of the engine?
No, you're right in that Evans does not use any water, so you don't have to worry. And they're a mixture of propylene and ethylene glycol. Now, ethylene glycol, of course, remember I said at 68% you're going to lose heat transfer. Propylene glycol, you don't. And so you get away from the contaminants of water, as long as nobody tops it off with something else. But the other thing, it doesn't matter whose product you use. There are things that take place in the cooling system and our engine that it doesn't matter whose product in there. It can destroy that coolant. So if you have an air leak into the cooling system, or you have a combustion gas leak or electrical ground problem, you still can have failure. So we still can't just put it in and forget it.
Right.
Okay.
But it's a technology that is valid and useful, or
it is. Just make sure that your engine manufacturer approves that type of coolant.
While we're on this, because Elizabeth, I've converted two of my trucks, and after doing a lot of research on the product, is your lab capable of testing an Evans coolant for us to tell us what's going on with it?
We are capable.
Okay.
The important thing is, no matter what you're using, when you send it into our lab or any lab, it's very important that you indicate the manufacturer and product name of the fluid that you're using, especially if you're using an Evans, because we have specifications that we compare the fluid to, your engine manufacturer specifications as well as your fluid manufacturer specifications. And if we don't have that information, then the flagging limits are very broad. And so, you know, you want to get the most bang for your buck. Make sure your lab knows your engine, make and model, as well as the fluid manufacturer and product type.
Got it.
And also different heating curves for those products. So you have ethylene glycol has a different heating curve than, say, propylene glycol or glycerin or what we call PDOs. So that's another reason why it's very important. Because if you didn't tell us it was Evans and you sent a sample in, and so we're looking at engine manufacturer specs, but we don't have the coolant manufacturer specs, and we see that glycol that high, we're going to tell you to drain some, okay?
Okay,
so that's
right.
Very
okay.
Important.
Okay. And we see this a lot with oil analysis. One of the things we've been trying to really get across to people is really be accurate on that form.
Exactly.
You know, the information that's on that form is really important.
Exactly. The more information you can give that laboratory, the better job they can do at giving you the recommendations.
Got it. One other question, and I'm not sure if you can answer this because it's more on the oil analysis side. When we're doing oil analysis and we know that the lab is able to help us detect a coolant leak, if
mm-hmm.
we're using Evans, will they also be able to detect that?
They should be able to. What say, like our lab, really what it goes looks at more is sodium and potassium, which are carrier metals used in, like, say, inhibitors. So you might have a sodium nitrite or a potassium phosphate, or they're just the carrier metals, but they're not found in oil.
Okay.
So they should be able to. That would be something, you know, I am such a coolant person, I never pretend
okay.
to be an oil person. I've done coolant my entire career. But we have some great analysts and specialists at the lab. Call them up and find out.
Yeah,
okay?
we'll do that.
We're for. We want our customers to communicate with us and call us and ask us questions so we can really help you.
Excellent. And now we do know from you that, and I am using Evans in my trucks. I can send a sample, just make sure I let you know that I'm using Evans, and you can still tell me what I need to know about the condition of the coolant.
Yes, yes.
Okay, very good. Anything else, you?
Oh, I'm still here? No, except that,
no.
Elizabeth, you're awesome.
Well, thank you.
Excellent. Let's see. Lonnie in Alabama, it's your turn.
Thanks for taking my call. I traditionally use concentrated extended life and then dilute it with distilled water. Is that the proper way to do that?
You're exactly right, and that's the only way to do it is to use distilled water. If you're going to purchase a concentrate, make sure you get distilled water.
Okay, and then I have to use the refractometer to make sure that I'm right on my portion of water versus the concentrate?
Yes, yes. Yes,
okay.
You want to make sure that you're right there between 50 and 60%, because even though you're down in Florida, you need it for that boil point control.
Right, now, is on this the newer engines, like the SCR engines and things like that, is it better to go with the extended life or to go ahead and migrate over towards Evans? I know I was talking to somebody about an SCR engine, and they, you know, when you were ordering the truck, you could put in one manufacturer, you could put anything in it you wanted. They didn't really care. And I was just wondering, where are we really on that with the new engines?
It really depends on whose engine it is. It really does.
And it all goes
back to the alloys and steel materials and hose materials.
And again, we'd be better off looking in the documentation, in the manual, rather than talking to, certainly, say, a salesperson.
Well,
exactly.
Absolutely. And actually, your lab could actually help on some things like that, too, correct?
Yes, we could. We could, yes. We know most of the engine manufacturer's specifications for products that are used. You know, if you look at what their specifications are and how they do it, if you have a CAT engine, CAT wants you to use Caterpillar Extended Life Coolant. If you're not going to use that, then the product must meet their specification EC1. But if you want to use a conventional coolant, they want you to use CAT DEAC. If you're not going to use their DEAC, then it must meet ASTM 6210. Detroit kind of did it a little bit different, where if a fluid manufacturer wanted their product considered for use in a Detroit engine, then the coolant manufacturer had to send in 2 gallons of fluid and $10,000, and Detroit had the testing done, and then they determined if that product can be used in their engine or not. So it's so engine manufacturer specific.
Hey, Elizabeth, I was kind of chuckling there because this is kind of what I went through the other day. And it just rolls right off your tongue, and I started to get lost again, and I know we'll catch up with this. But it was like, if you're going to use this, then you're okay. But if you're not, you got to use this, but it needs to be this. I think in the beginning – we're going to take the easy way out. We're going to check the manual and call you.
Exactly. There you go.
Yeah, I think that's what we're going to have to do.
Thank you
and
so very much.
Therefore, you're welcome.
You're welcome. Let's try to squeeze in as many more as we can. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Daryl, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a question for her about, I've been using a Penray need release coolant filter. Is that a bad idea?
No, that's not a bad idea. Penray has a very good need release filter. It's designed on, it has inhibitor cakes. Those inhibitors are typically, nitrite, polytriazole, and some Anaphone, and it's designed on your pump flow, and there's little very thin magnesium discs in between the inhibitor cakes, and so that's how it replenishes it. It erodes away at that magnesium disc, and once it gets through there, then it can dissolve out those inhibitors to replenish the SCAs into your coolant. And it makes it, it's a good answer for a lot of people, so they're not over-inhibiting in that. The thing to remember is that you don't want to use that filter, plus also put in a fully formulated coolant as well, because you can over-treat. So again, we come back to use those test strips. But it is a really good, it was a really good answer for a lot of people out there. I know Cone's Filtration has filters as well, and there's Wix has filters. There's quite a few of those type of filters, and it makes it very easy to maintain. But you still need to be measuring it with the test strips to make sure that your inhibitor level is adequate and you're not over inhibiting. One of the things we've seen, at least through my career, is it shops not knowing or understanding that it's already inhibited with those filters, and they add liquid SCAs. So again, make sure you know what the shop's doing.
All right. Well, we've been putting a standard drain coolant in, so that's okay to use with the Fenray then?
Yeah.
Okay.
You mean your ELC, are you using an oat coolant? You said extended drain. Are you using an organic acid technology coolant?
I'm not sure which it is. It's one of the, like, orangish, reddish-looking standard drain that the shop where I'm leased to, they use that, and then they don't do any additives at all. They just run that.
Yeah, that product doesn't have to have the additives. It already has it in there. Okay, so you wouldn't need a needs-release filter for an organic additive technology coolant, and they're two different formulations.
So it shouldn't combine the two, then?
No. If you're going to use organic additive technology coolant, then just use a filter that just has the filter paper. If you're going to use a conventional coolant, then you can use the need release filters. But those are designed for conventional coolants.
All right. So I appreciate it. That's what I was wanting to know.
Sure.
That's what I'm doing. I'm using.
Sure.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Harold in Canada. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Elizabeth. Kevin, how are you?
Hi.
Good.
Sort of refreshing to have someone with a fair bit of knowledge. That's nice.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is. It's very refreshing. The question with the Evans. Now, I switched over last spring. And I ran, normal temperatures, like 190, that I run for years with traditional antifreeze. And then last month, I finally changed up the thermostats to the 215, running very, very warm. One thing I've noticed with the Evans, which was interesting, and we were warned about it, that with, the truck is 15 years old, that any calcium build, the Evans would actually remove the calcium and clean the system, which it did big time. Within 3 months, I had to replace the radiator and clean it.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I've noticed in the last oil sample, like my sodium went up about 20 points from 9 was an average. It's been running 9 to 10, and it went up to about 22. But the potassium has still stayed the same. That hasn't changed. My concern was with the Evans, and from what I'm gathering, you're not sure whether the sodium would go up or the potassium or both like it would on regular antifreeze.
Right. It depends on the additive package that Evans is using. They're probably using a sodium carrier, and that could be an indication that you have a slight coolant leak.
Yeah, that's what I'm concerned with here. I'll check it here again. I know I had a water pump sweating a little bit, and I changed the water pump out, so hopefully that was the issue.
Okay.
And that's a question we'll get some answers to. But in the meantime, Elizabeth, he could call the lab directly on the oil analysis side, let him know that he's got the Evans, and they could tell him whether or not it was just sodium or if that may be what's going on, correct?
Correct. And most of the inhibitors are a sodium-based. Okay, potassium Some coolants have potassium-based carriers, and usually those are potassium phosphate. But it's typically we see more sodium increasing when we have a slight coolant leak than we do the potassium, just because of kind of the change in formulations and going more towards the sodium carrier type of inhibitor base.
Got it. Okay. And again, we'll get somebody on. We, you know, do oil all the time, and I keep meaning to ask that question, but we'll get somebody on and we'll get that answered because we do have a lot more people moving to the ovens. Let's go to Nebraska. Kirk, welcome to the program.
Good evening. How are you guys doing?
Good. Great. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, here it was about January of this year. We started off on a trip. First thing we noticed was the main hose coming out of the surge tank was broken. We cut a section of it off, reattached it. Went on our trip, and then we got a service done, and they dipped a pH strip into the surge tank to test our pH, and it came out, and it was completely covered in oil. Well, to make a long story short, we got some repairs done, and it was, I think it was like a oil cooler filter that they had to fix. And, well, basically, you were talking about any kind of petroleum products being damaging to seals and hoses and things of that sort. I know that the system was completely flushed and all the contaminants were taken out of it and everything got fixed and everything. I was just wondering if there was going to be any kind of like long-term effects that I'm going to have to worry about, like maybe if I should change out all the hoses or if the flushing would be sufficient for that.
No, the flushing would be sufficient. It sounded like that you got on top of it fairly quickly, and that's really the key to it. You know, if you notice any oil or fuel or hydrocarbon contaminant, that you fix the problem and then you clean it out with a cleaner designed to remove oil or fuel from the cooling system. There's a lot of them out there, but there's also a procedure that you can use powdered electric dish soap. It's an approved, it's been around for years. It was approved by CAT probably 20 years ago. Use a quarter cup per 15-gallon system. You want to make sure that you dissolve that electric dish soap in the hot water first. It must be phosphate-free. There's three products that we've continually tested that we know will not damage the system, and that's Calgon, Cascade, or Electrosol. But the other thing that you have to remember is that us housewives like new and improved things as well. And so some of these brands have also come out with some that have chlorine bleach in that. Make sure you get the base product, and it has to be powdered, not the gel.
Got it. Okay. I want to take one more quick call and then wrap this up with a couple things and phone numbers so I have something ready to write with. Mike in Pennsylvania, it's your turn.
Hey, Kevin. Hello?
Yep, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Good.
Hey, I got a quick question for you. Well, first of all, I got to tell you that, Lisa is one of my most favorite people in the world. I used to work with her. But
okay.
I'm pretty new at the owner-operator gig, and I'm listening. She was talking about additives to put in, and I really didn't, and I don't know if I got into the show late, what would be the additive to put into my system, or I would need to?
They're called supplemental coolant additives or diesel engine coolant additives. They're additional chemicals versus just your basic antifreeze package. With our heavy-duty engines, we have a lot different additional metals than, say, like your automotive engine does. And so this additive package has the different inhibitors in there that are designed to protect your various metals. Like you have azoles for copper and brass protection. You'd have silicate for aluminum protection. If it has phosphate, that's for iron protection. So that's what is an additive package to protect all those various metals.
Okay, boy, I think I've absorbed about all I can absorb for an evening right now. But
Elizabeth,
I really
are you speaking English?
I'm trying to make sure I don't forget what SCAs and DCAs are, but I think I've got that one. And
well, they're
the same,
different name for them.
Yeah, got it. And OATs and NOATs. I think I've got it. We are out of time, but before we wrap this up, Elizabeth, in order to get that initial testing so we can make sure that our system's right and we can get started on the right foot, where can they call to get a sample kit to get an analysis done?
They can call us. Our toll-free number is 877-808-3750. And we're running a special for your listeners till the end of December for a level 2 coolant analysis. It'd be $12.50, but you must call into the lab and mention the radio show so that you get that pricing. It's a very good price for that level 2 analysis. And that will test your metals, your contaminants, and your inhibitors.
Excellent. So that's step number one. Let's find out what we've got in there. Let's make sure it's up to snuff and it's what we should have. And then we'll continue on with this as far as ongoing maintenance. And one of the things I'm looking forward to is, and maybe we can do this next time. Can we do some reviews of samples? Is that something that we could do?
I would love to do that. I would love to do that. Because we've set up this special testing for you, I have a way to go in and easily find testing that we've done from your listeners. And I would love to go over some of those and talk about maybe issues we found or maybe, you know, it's going to look really good.
Fantastic. I will look forward to that. Again, thanks. I'm, you know, going to have to study so that next time I remember a few of these things and I sound more intelligent last time than I did this time.
Well, there you go.
All right.
Don't ask
Very
me oil
good.
Questions there.
Yeah, okay. That's right. Okay. Very good. Again, Elizabeth, thank you. And thanks, everybody. We're all out of time. That number for the lab, again, 877-808-3750. Tell them you heard it on the show. You'll get the special level 2 pricing, $12.50. You can't beat it. Thanks, everyone, and we'll see you in 30 minutes on the live show. I'm Kevin.